Heyo, and welcome to Dune Reads Goosebumps. I am Dune, and this is part one of The Horror at Camp Jelly Jam by R.L. Stine on Dune Reads Goosebumps. This may be the first episode that I've banked ever, because after months of, where's Goosebumps? Hey, where's Goosebumps? Dune, you're an asshole, make Goosebumps. I was like, here, and then threw just like a, you know, barrel full of Goosebumps on top of people, drowning them. So I figure the best way to do this, if I am going to keep doing it, which I am, so donate, is doing a weekly thing. So I don't know what day it is yet. It'll probably be iffy for a little bit, but I should come out with an episode a week. So two full books a month, unless I'm doing the choose your own or adventure, the give yourself Goosebumps one. Then those ones are complete books in one episode. Heyo. Franklin's feeling a little sick. He just had a little rhea, and he was hiding. He came out for a treat, though, so that's good. But I might be distracted. Anyway, I will keep taping. Chapter 15. A hot gust of wind shook the trees like God was farting, making their eerie, dark shadows dance. I leaped back, startled by the girl's terrified cries. Help me, please! She came running around from the side of the tennis courts, like Franklin just ran back to bed, making his father very happy. She wore bright, tight short shorts, and a magenta midriff top. Her arms were stretched out in front of her. Her long hair flew wildly behind her head. I recognized her as soon as she burst into view. The little redhead girl with all the freckles. Little Miss Bonaducci, the one who had hidden in the woods and warned Elliot me not to come to camp at all. Help me! She ran right into me. Sobbing hard, I threw my arms around her tiny shoulders and held her. You're okay, I whispered. You're okay, completely bullshitting her. No, she shrieked. She tugged away from me. What's wrong? Jan demanded. Why are you out here? Why aren't you in bed? Ivy added, stepping up beside me and helping the situation in no way whatsoever. The little girl didn't answer. Her entire body trembled. She grabbed my hand and pulled me behind the bushes beside the path. Jan and Ivy followed. I'm not okay, she started, wiping the tears off her freckled cheeks with both hands. I'm not okay, she said like Gerard Way. I'm not. I... What's your name? Jan asked in a whisper. Why are you out here? Ivy repeated, once again not helping at all. I heard the flutter of bat wings again, low overhead. But I stared at the little girl and forced myself to ignore them. My name is Alicia, the girl replied, sobbing. We've got to go, fast! Huh? I cried, taking a deep breath. Alicia, you're okay, really? No, she cried, shaking her head. You're safe now. You're with us, I insisted. We're not safe, she cried. No one, not here. I tried to warn the people. I tried to tell you. Her words were cut off again by her loud sobs. That's how I sound when I cry. What is it? Ivy demanded. What did you try to warn us about? Jan asked, leaning down to the crying girl.
I saw something terrible, Alicia stammered.
What did you see? I asked impatiently.
I followed them, Alicia replied, and I saw it. Something horrible. I can't talk about it. We just have to run. We have to run for the hills. We have to tell the others, everyone. We have to run. We have to get away from here.
She let out another long breath. Her entire body trembled again. But why do we have to run? I asked, placing my hands gently on her shoulders. I felt so bad. I wanted to calm her. I wanted to tell her that everything would be okay. But I didn't know how to convince her. What had she said? What had frightened her so much? Had she had a bad dream? Maybe an acid dream? Was she fearful and loathsome?
Yeah, using words that I barely know.
We have to go now, she repeated shrilly. Her red hair was matted to her face by her tears. She grabbed my arm and pulled hard. Hurry, we've got to run. I saw it.
Saw what? I cried. Alicia had no time to reply.
A dark-haired counselor stepped out in front of the bushes. Caught you, he cried. Chapter 16. I froze. My entire body went cold. The counselor's dark eyes flashed in the light of a spotlight. "What are you doing out here?" he demanded. I sucked in a deep breath and started to answer, but another voice replied before I could. "Kinda nosy, aren't you?" It was another counselor, a woman with short black hair. Breathing hard, trying not to make a sound, I ducked lower behind the bushes. My two friends dropped to their knees. "You aren't following me, are you?" The first counselor.
"You aren't following me, are you?"
The first counselor teased. "Why would I follow you? Maybe you're following me," the woman teased back. Oh, they're gonna fuck. They didn't see us, I realized happily. We were 2 feet away from them, but they didn't see us behind the bushes. A few seconds later, the two counselors strolled off together. Really? Only 2 seconds? Or a few seconds? I think I came quick. Whatever. My friends and I waited for a long time, listening hard until we could no longer hear their voices. Then we climbed slowly to our feet. "Alicia?" I asked, "are you okay? Alicia?" Ivy and Jan cried. The little girl had vanished. Drinking break. Back to the vodka and weird sparkling water and fruit deals. We sneaked back into the dorm through a side door. Luckily, there was no counselor patrolling the halls. No one in sight. "Deirdre, are you back?" Jan called, remembering her name as well, as we stepped into our room. No reply. I clicked on the light. Deirdre's bunk remained empty. "Better turn off the light," Ivy warned. "It's after lights out." I clicked the light back off. Then I stumbled toward my bunk, waiting for my eyes to adjust to the darkness. "Where's Deirdre?" Ivy asked. "I'm a little worried about her. Maybe we should tell a counselor that she's missing." "What counselor?" Jan asked, slumped in the bed. "There's no one around. The counselors are all out somewhere." "They're probably doing it. IT, you know what I'm talking about? Sexual intercourse. With their dongs and vagina spaces. You know what I'm talking about. I've heard of sex. I'm pretty cool." "I'm sure she's partying somewhere and forgot all about us," I said, yawning and not understanding what partying means. I bent down to pull the covers on my bed. "What do you think the little girl saw?" Ivy asked, peering out the window. "Alicia? I think she just had a bad dream," I replied. "But she was so frightened," Jan said, shaking her head. "And what was she doing outside? And why did she run away from us like that?" Ivy added. "Weird," I mumbled. "Weird is right," Jan agreed. "Weird is the word of the night." Ah! So this episode, when we hear a word, we're yelling. She made her way to the dresser. "I'm getting changed for bed. Big day tomorrow. I've got to win 2 more king coins. "Me too," Ivy said, yawning. Jan pulled out a dresser drawer. "Oh, no!" she shrieked. "No, I don't believe it." Chapter 17. "Jan, what is it?" I cried. Ivy and I tore across the room to the dresser. Jan continued to stare down into the open drawer. "It's so dark," she said. "I opened Deirdre's drawer by mistake and... it's... empty!" "Huh?" Ivy and I both uttered our surprise. Squinting through the dim gray light, I studied the dresser drawer. Totally empty. "Check the closet," I suggested. Really, that's the literary device he's using? He's like, "And I just looked in this by accident." No, whatever. No big deal. That's what happened. That's how he made the discovery. I just happened to look there by accident. Ivy crossed the room in 3 or 4 quick strides. She pulled open the closet door. Deirdre's stuff. "It's all gone," Ivy declared. "Weird! Ah!" I muttered. It was still the word of the night. Hey, that's actually what it says in the text. It is the word of the night, listeners. Let's keep it up. "Why would she move out and not tell us?" Jan demanded. "Where did she go?" Ivy added. "Good question," I thought, staring at the empty closet. "Where did Deirdre go?" Asterisk, asterisk, asterisk. Breakfast was the noisiest meal of the day. Spoons be clattering, all up on cereal bowls and shit.
Orange drank pitchers banging on the long wooden tables like a motherfucker. Voices rang out as if someone had turned up the volume all the fucking way. All the way to 11. Everyone talked excitedly about the sports they planned to play today. The games they planned to win. I had taken the last shower, so Jan and Ivy were already eating breakfast when I made my way into the mess hall. As I pushed through the narrow aisle between the tables, I searched for Deirdre. No sign of her. I hadn't slept very well. Even though I was really tired, I kept thinking about Deirdre and about Alicia, and I kept wondering what the fuck was taking Mom and Dad so long to get in touch with us, even though last time I saw them, they were barreling down a hill with no control of their vehicle and clearly dead. I spotted Elliot at the end of the table filled with boys about his age. He had a stack of waffles in front of him, and he was pouring dark syrup over them. "Elliot, what's up?" I called, squeezing through the aisle to get over to him. My brother didn't bother saying good morning. "I've got a one-on-one tournament this morning," he reported excitedly. "I could win my third king coin." "Thrills and chills," I replied like an idiot, rolling my eyes. "You haven't heard anything about Mom and Dad, have you?" He stared at me as if he didn't remember who they were. Then he shook his head. "Not yet. Isn't this a great camp? Didn't we luck out, or what?" I didn't reply. My eyes were on the next table. I thought I had spotted Deirdre, but it was just another girl with streaky blonde hair, because all blondes are the same. "Have you won any coins yet?" Elliot asked. He had a mouthful of waffle, syrup dripping down his chin. "Not yet," I replied. He snickered. "They should change the camp slogan for you, Wendy. Only the..." Pause for effect. "Worst!" Elliot laughed. The other boys at the table laughed, too. As I said, Elliot really cracks himself up. I wasn't in the mood for his lame jokes. My mind was on my money, and my money was on my motherfucking mind. "Also, Deirdre. Catch you later," I said. I squeezed past the table and headed towards the girls' side of the room. Cheers and laughter rang out at a table near the wall. A scrambled egg-tossing battle had broken out. Three counselors rushed to stop it. Kids are crazy. Jan and Ivy's table was full. I found an empty space at the next table. I poured myself a glass of juice and a bowl of cornflakes, but I didn't feel too hungry. "Hey!" I called out when I saw Buddy walk by. He didn't hear me over the noise, so I jumped up and ran after him. "Hey! Hey, what's up?" He greeted me with a smile. I forgot that's his voice. The good thing about recording these so quick is that I can remember the voices somewhat. His blonde hair was still wet from the shower. He smelled kind of flowery. Aftershave, I guess. "Do you know where Deirdre went?" I demanded. He narrowed his eyes in surprise. "Deirdre?" "A girl in my dorm room," I explained. "She didn't come back to the room last night. Her closet is empty." "Deirdre," he repeated, thinking hard. He raised his clipboard to his face and ran his finger down it slowly. "Oh yeah, she's gone." His cheek turned bright pink. "Excuse me?" I stared up at him. "Deirdre is gone? Where did she go? Home?" He studied the sheet on his clipboard. "I guess. It just says she's gone." His cheeks darkened from pink to red. "That's so weird." I told him. "She didn't say goodbye or anything." Buddy shrugged. A smile spread over his face. "Have a nice day." He started towards the counselor's table at the front of the huge room, but I ran after him. I grabbed his arm. "Buddy, one more question," I said. "Do you know where I can find a little girl named Alicia?" Buddy waved to some boys across the room. "Go get 'em, guys! Only the best!" he shouted to them. Then he turned back at me. "Alicia?" "I don't know her last name. She's probably 6 or 7, I told him. "She has beautiful long red hair and a face full of freckles." "Alicia!" He chewed his bottom lip. Then he raised the clipboard again. I watched as he ran his fingers down the list of names. When his fingers stopped, his cheeks turned pink again. "Oh yeah, Alicia," he said, lowering the clipboard. He grinned at me, a strange grin, a chilling grin. "She's gone, too."
"Franklin, you doing all right? You look all right. You look a little tired and bummed, but you're all right. I love you."
Chapter 18, I love you too, listener. Jan, Ivy, I saw them hurrying from the mess hall and I chased after them. We've got to talk, I cried breathlessly. We can't, we're late. Jan straightened her bangs with one hand. If we don't get to the volleyball nets in time, we can't be in the tournament. But it's important, I called out as they jogged to the doors. They didn't seem to hear me. I watched them disappear into the morning sunlight. My heart pounded in my chest. I suddenly felt cold all over. I caught up with my brother, who's playfully boxing a tall, skinny boy with short blonde hair. Elliot, come here, I instructed. Just for a minute. In a minute! I can't, he called. Remember my one-on-one contest? The tall, skinny boy hurried out the door. I stepped in front of Elliot, blocking his path. Give me a break! He cried, saying the last in a long string of, fucking shit, I'm gonna pause. All right. I took a couple deep breaths, and I'm back. I can do this. Give me a break, he cried. I don't want to be late. I'm going against Jeff. Remember him? I can beat him. He's big, but he's real slow. Like Slowpoke, the Pokemans. Elliot, something strange is going on here, I said, backing him against the wall. Kids were staring at us as they made their way outside, but I didn't give a shit. You're the only one who's strange, Elliot shot back. Are you going to let me go to the basketball court or not? He started to push past me. I pinned his shoulders to the wall with both hands, like a rad bully from an 80s movie. Just give me 1 second, I insisted. There's something wrong with this camp, Elliot. I let go of him. You mean the rumbling noises? He asked, brushing back his dark hair with one hand. That's just gas under the ground or something. A counselor explained it to me. He said, like, two dudes were fracking down there, and then they passed gas after fracking. It's totally legit. That's not what I'm talking about, I replied. Kids are disappearing. He laughed. Invisible kids? You mean like a magic trick? Stop making fun of me, I snapped. It isn't funny, Elliot. Kids are disappearing. Deirdre from my dorm? She was in the winner's walk last night. Then she didn't come back to the room. Elliot's grin faded. This morning, Buddy told me she was gone. I continued. I snapped my fingers. Just like that. A little girl named Alicia, she disappeared too. Elliot's brown eyes studied mine. Kids have to go home sometime, he insisted. What's the big deal? And what about Mom and Dad, I demanded. They couldn't have driven very far before realizing they didn't have a fucking trailer behind their truck. Why haven't they found us? Why hasn't the camp found them? Elliot shrugged. Beats me, he replied casually. He dodged past me and started to the door. Wendy, you're just unhappy because you stink at sports. But I'm having a great time here. Don't mess it up for me. Capiche? But, Elliot, I sputtered. Shaking his head, he pushed the door with both hands and escaped into the sunlight. I balled both hands into tight fists. I really wanted to give him a pounding. Why wouldn't he listen to me? Couldn't he see how upset and frightened I was? Ooh, maybe she is fear and loathing. Elliot is the kind of kid who never worries about anything. Everything always seems to go his way. So why should he sweat it? But you'd think he'd just be a little worried about his mom and dad. Mom and Dad! I had such a heavy feeling in my stomach as I made my way slowly out the door. Diarrhea. Just like you, Franklin. Can you look up at me when I talk? Franklin, you gonna look at me? Yeah, okay. That's all. You can go back to sleep.
Had they been in a car accident or something? Is that why they hadn't found Elliot and me yet?
No. Stop making things worse. I scolded myself. Don't let your imagination run away with you, Wendy. I suddenly remembered my plan to call home. Yes, I decided. I will do that now. I will call home and leave a message for Mom and Dad on the answering machine. I stopped in the middle of the path and searched for the payphone. A group of girls carrying hockey sticks passed by. I heard a long whistle coming from the pool across from the tennis courts. Then I heard the splash of kids diving into the water. Everyone is having fun, I thought. Except
Me. I decided to make the call, then find a sport to play. Something to take my mind off all my crazy worries. I returned to the row of blue and white payphones, much like a TARDIS, at the side of the lodge. I ran full speed and picked up the nearest phone. I raised the receiver to my ear and started to punch in our number. Then I cried out in surprise!
Chapter 19.
Hey there, camper! Boomed a cheerful, deep voice. Have a wonderful day at camp. This is King Jellyjam greeting you. Work hard, play hard, and win. And always remember, only the best. Oh no, I cried a stupid message. Hey there, camper! Have a wonderful day! The tape started to repeat in my ear. I slammed the receiver down and picked up the next phone. Hey there, camper! Have a wonderful day! The same jolly booming voice, the same recorded message, like every time Dune called the Wally Bear in the No Gang phone line when he was a kid, and it went, hello, 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 friends, it's me, Wally Bear! And there was at one point a Wally Bear game for NES, and you had to stop drug dealers or some shit like that, and I learned not to do drugs. And the message stuck. I tried every phone in the row. They all played the same message. Hello! Hello! Hello there, camp! None of the phones were real. Where are the real phones? I wondered. There have to be real phones that actually work. I turned away from the lodge and wandered down the dirt path. As I passed the bushes where Jan, Ivy, and I had hid last night, I felt a chill, and I thought about Alicia. Bright sunlight washed over the slopping, grassy hill. I shielded my eyes and watched a black and gold monarch butterfly. It fluttered toward a patch of red and green geraniums. I walked aimlessly, searching for a telephone. Dune is still proud of himself for correctly pronouncing geraniums. All around, kids were shouting, laughing, playing hard. I didn't really hear them. I was deep in my own troubled thoughts, writing goth girl poetry in a kiddie folder. Hey! Hey, hey! My brother's voice startled me into stopping. I blinked several times. Blink, blink, blink. Struggling to focus, I saw that I'd wandered down to the basketball court. Elliot and Jeff were having their one-on-one basketball competition. Jeff dribbled the ball. It thudded loudly on the asphalt court. My brother waved both arms in Jeff's face, made a grab for the ball, and missed. Jeff lowered his shoulders, bumped Elliot out of the way, dribbled to the basket, and shot. 2 points, he cried, grinning. Elliot scowled and shook his head. You fouled me. Jeff pretended not to hear. He was twice as big as Elliot, a big hulk. He could push Elliot all over the court if he wanted to. Whatever made Elliot think he could win? It's like when Michael Jordan went up against the space aliens, but then he learned a lesson that... Fuck, I don't remember that movie. Something about you can't resist the Borgs, it's futile to do so. What's the score? Jeff demanded, wiping sweat off his forehead with the back of one hand. 18-10, Elliot reported unhappily. I didn't need 20 guesses to figure out that my brother was losing. The basketball court was closed off by a mesh wire fence. I grabbed the fence with both hands, pressing my face against it, like they do in the flashback thing in Terminator 2 when the whole world's destroyed, and watched. Elliot dribbled, moving back, giving himself some space. Jeff moved with him, leaning forward, adjusting his basketball shorts with one hand as he moved. Suddenly, Elliot burst forward, his eyes in the basket. He started his jump, raised his hand to shoot, and Jeff grabbed the ball away. Elliot jumped and shot, but nothing but air. Jeff dribbled twice, put up a two-handed layup. Swish! The score was 20-10. And the worst part was now Jeff was heated up. One more basket and he would be on fire. Then he could slam-a-lam-a-ding-dong all he wanted. Jeff won the game a few seconds later. Slam-a-lam-a-ding-dong! He let out a cheer and slapped Elliot a high five. Elliot frowned and shook his head. Lucky shots, he muttered. Yeah, for sure, Jeff replied, using the front of his sleeveless blue t-shirt to mop his sweaty face. Hey, congratulate me, man. You're my sixth victim. Huh? Elliot stared at him, hands pressed against his knees, struggling to catch his breath.
You mean? Yeah, Jeff grinned. My sixth King coin. I get to march the winner's walk tonight. Wow, that is cool, Elliot replied without enthusiasm. Wow, that's cool. Dune corrected. I still have 3 coins to go. I had the sudden feeling that I was being watched. I let go of the wire fence and took a step back. Buddy had been staring at me from the path. His eyes were narrowed and his mouth was set in a stern, unhappy expression. How long had he been standing there? Why did he look so unhappy? His grim expression gave me a chill. As I turned to him, he stepped forward. His blue eyes stared hard into mine. I'm sorry, Wendy, the counselor said softly, but you have to go. All right, for those concerned, Franklin is up and at him. He was just on my lap. I was giving him some attention, doing that little butt scratch thing, what makes his little leg go...
Chapter 20.
Excuse me? I gaped at it. My mouth dropped open. What was he saying? Where did I have to go? Did he mean I have to go like Deirdre and Alicia? You have to find a sport, Buddy repeated, still speaking softly. His solemn expression didn't change. You can't stand around watching other kids play. King Jelly Jam would never approve of that. I'd like to step on that ugly little blob, I thought angrily, like Dune does about David Wilde. What a stupid name, King Jelly Jam, yuck! Buddy had just scared me to death. Was he trying to frighten me? I wondered. No, I quickly decided. Buddy doesn't know when I'm upset when that... Buddy doesn't know that I'm upset about things. How could he know? Buddy hurried on the basketball court. He slapped Jeff on the back and handed him a gold King coin. Way to go, guy! He cried, flashing Jeff a thumbs up. I'll see you at the winner's walk tonight. Only the best. Buddy said a few words to my brother. Elliot shrugged a few times. Then he said something that made Buddy laugh. I couldn't hear their words. When Elliot trotted off to find his next sport, Buddy strode quickly back to me. He put an arm around my shoulders and guided me away from the basketball court. I guess you're not a self-starter, Wendy, he said. I guess, I replied. What was I supposed to say? Well, I'm going to give you a schedule for today. See if you like it, Buddy said. First, I have a tennis match. Find up. Ha ha, typo! It says find up for you, but obviously it's lined up. First, I have a tennis match lined up for you. You play tennis, right? A little, I told him. I'm not that great, but... After tennis, come down to the softball diamond. Okay, Buddy continued. We'll get you on one of the softball teams. You're a lesbian, right? He flashed me a warm smile. I think you'll have a lot more fun if you join in, don't ya? Yeah, probably, I replied. I wanted to sound more enthusiastic, but I just couldn't. Buddy led me on to one of the black tennis courts. An African-American girl about my age was warming up by hitting a tennis ball against a backboard. Little did I know, this was the young Venus Williams. She turned and greeted me as I approached. How's it going? She asked in a tone that was not racist at all, and everyone should be proud of Dune. Fine, I replied. We introduced ourselves. Her name was Rose. She was tall and pretty. She wore a purple tank top over black shorts. I saw a silver ring dangling from one ear. Buddy handed me a racket. Have fun, he said. And watch out, Wendy. Rose already has 5 King coins. Are you a good tennis player? I asked, twirling the racket in my hand. Rose nodded. Yeah, pretty good. How about you? I don't know, I told her honestly. My friend and I always play just for fun. Rose laughed, a deep laugh. It made me want to laugh too. I never play for fun, she declared. She told the truth. We volleyed back and forth for a while to get warmed up. Rose leaned forward, tensed her body, narrowed her eyes, then started slamming the ball back at me, as if we were playing the final set of a championship. She played even harder once we started our match. I found out very quickly that I was no match for her. I was lucky to return a few of her serves. Rose was a good sport about it. I caught her snickering a few times at my two-handed backhand, but she didn't make fun of my pitiable... She didn't make fun of my...
fucking shitty game and shit, and she gave me some really helpful tips as the match continued. She won in straight sets. I congratulated her. She seemed really excited about winning her 6th King coin. A woman counselor I hadn't seen before appeared in the court and presented a coin to Rose. "See you at the winner's walk tonight," she said, grinning. Then the counselor turned to me. "The softball diamond is right over that hill, Wendy," she pointed. I thanked her and began walking in that direction. "Don't walk, run," she called like a bitch. "If there's time to lean, there's time to clean," like every shitty manager that still works at a goddamn Jamba Juice anyway. "Let's see some spirit, only the best." I let out an unhappy groan. I don't think she heard me. Then I obediently started to run. That was a running sound. "Why was everyone always rushing me around here?" I complained silently. "What am I, in Russia?" Oh, dude. "Why can't I go lie down by the pool and work on my tan? Obviously, Rose got a good tan." See, that was the first time I made fun of her for being black. As the softball diamond came into view, I started to cheer up a little. I actually like softball. I'm not much of a fielder, but I'm a pretty good slugger. The teams I saw had boys and girls on them. I recognized two of the girls from my breakfast table this morning. One of them tossed me a bat. "Hi, I'm Ronnie. You can be on our team," she said. "Can you pitch?" "I guess," I replied, wrapping my hands around the bat. "Sometimes I pitch after school on the playground." She nodded. "Okay, you can pitch the first couple innings." Ronnie called the other girls together and we huddled. We went around the circle giving our names. Then, the kids who didn't have fielding positions chose their spots. "If we win, do we all get king coins?" a boy with a fake tattoo of an eagle on his shoulder asked. What a weird extra detail. Yeah, he's got a fake tattoo of an eagle. He needs some sort of shtick. "Yes, all of us," Ronnie told him. Everyone cheered. "Yeah! Don't start cheering yet. We gotta win first," Ronnie exclaimed. She went around the circle, giving the batting order. Since I was the pitcher, I batted 9th. But since I had a bat, I decided to take a few practice swings. I stepped away from the others, behind the 3rd baseline. Easing my hands up on the bat, I took a soft swing. I like to choke up pretty high. I'm not very strong. It gives me a harder swing. No, it doesn't. The bat felt pretty good. I took a few more soft swings. Then I pulled it behind my shoulder and swung like a motherfucker. I didn't see Buddy standing there. The bat smacked him hard in the chest. It made a sickening fuck-quack as it crashed into his ribs. I guess that bat speaks Klingon. Because the sound it made was T-H-O-C-C-C-C-C-K. You know? Like Klingon? Like kapla, you know? I'm so funny. I let the bat fall from my hands. Then I staggered back, stunned, horrified. Going back and forth from arguing on Facebook about the new release schedule and people having complaints, yeah. Chapter 21. Woo-wah! Buddy's smile faded. He narrowed his blue eyes at me. He raised a hand and pointed a finger at me. "I like the way you choke up," he said, "but maybe we could find you a lighter bat." Huh? My mouth hung open. I couldn't move. I stood there, gaping at him. "Buddy?" He picked up the bat from the ground. "Does it feel comfortable? Let me see you swing again, Wendy." He handed the bat back to me. My hands trembled as I took it from him. I kept my eyes on him, waiting for him to cry out, to grab his chest and collapse in a heap on the ground. "Some of the aluminum bats are lighter," he said. He brushed back his blonde hair with one hand. "Go ahead, swing again." I took a few shaky steps away from him. I wanted to make sure I didn't hit him again. Then I choked up on the bat and swung. "How is it?" he asked. Fine, I stammered. He flashed me a thumbs up and went to talk to Ronnie. Whoa, I thought. What is the story here? I swung the bat into his chest, hard enough to break a few ribs, or at least knock his breath out. But Buddy didn't even seem to notice. What is the story here? It says that part in italics. Like, it's emphasizing the phrase, what is the story here? Maybe that was a catchphrase at the time. Was that on Friends? This is one of those little, you know, double-spaced cocktail breaks. I told Jan and Ivy about it at dinner. Jan snickered. I guess your swing isn't as hard as you think.
But it made a horrible sound, like eggs breaking or something, I exclaimed. And he just went on smiling and talking.
He probably waited until he was out of sight. Then he screamed his head off, Ivy suggested. I forced myself to laugh along with my two friends.
Aw, she has friends.
But I didn't feel like laughing.
It was all too strange.
R.L. Stine using the word strange rather than weird so I can't go,
asshole. I mean, no one could take a blow like that right in the chest and not even say, ouch. Our team lost by 10 points. But after that, who could think about the goddamn game?
I glanced across the room to the counselor's table. Buddy sat at one end, talking and laughing with Holly. He seemed perfectly okay. I kept glancing at him all through dinner, again and again. I heard the sickening the bat made as it smashed into his chest. I just couldn't get it out of my mind.
Oh God, what song did I have stuck in my mind for goddamn ever recently?
Oh God, you don't care. I think it was a Modest Mouse song.
Oh God, this doesn't matter, and I don't want to back in there anyway.
I kept thinking about it as we trooped out to the track after dinner for the winner's walk. It was a windy night. The torches flickered and nearly went out. The trees around the track shivered and bent. Their branches seemed to reach down for the ground. The marching music started. The winners paraded by. Rose waved to me as she passed. I saw Jeff walking proudly near the back of the line, his gold coins jangling around his neck. After the ceremony, I hurried back to the room and climbed into bed. Too many troubling thoughts whirred around in my brain. I wanted to go to sleep and shut them out.
This is an awkward cocktail pause that he put in there. Twice in one chapter, I think.
Because it only has one more line. The next morning at breakfast, Rose and Jeff were gone.
All right, disregard the intro of this one. I'm just going to keep putting out a shit ton of episodes at once and then go and dry for a little bit. Hopefully the dry stretches will be very short because the weekly thing apparently doesn't apply to Dune Reads Goosebumps. And this is a long chapter. I just got up, had some water, applied some Burt's Bees, so I'm ready to record it. This chapter is 22. It has to use the same number twice. That's how long it is. Dear fuck.
I searched for Rose and Jeff, and I searched for my brother all morning. I knew he'd be playing hard at one of the sports, but I walked from the soccer field at one end of the camp to the driving range at the other, and I didn't see him.
Whoa, there's golf at this camp? Now I'm interested. One time I went to golf camp. It wasn't golf, like, camp, like, I didn't go sleep there, but I took, like, golf lessons when I was in, like, fifth or sixth grade at, like, a Balboa golf course. I like golf.
Had Elliot disappeared too? The frightening thought kept tugging into my mind. We've got to get out of this camp! I kept repeating those words to myself as I made my way along the crisscrossing dirt pass. King Jelly Jammed, a little purple blob, grinned at me from the signs posted everywhere. Even his cartoon smile gave me the creeps. Something was terribly wrong at King Jelly Jam Sports Camp. And the more I walked, my eyes searched every face for my brother, the more frightened I became. Buddy caught up to me after lunch. He led me back to the softball diamond.
Wendy, you can't leave your team, he said sternly.
Forget yesterday. You still have a chance. If you win today, you guys all win king coins.
I didn't want any fucking king coins. I wanted to see my parents. I wanted to see my brother. And I wanted to get out of here.
I didn't pitch today. I must have been a bottom. I played left field, which gave me plenty of time to think. I planned our escape. It won't be that hard, I decided. Elliot and I sneaked out after dinner. We'll sneak out after dinner when everyone is watching the winners walk. We'll make our way down the hill back to the highway. Then we'll walk or hitchhike to the nearest town with a police station. I knew the police would find Mom and Dad for us easily. A simple plan, right? Now, all I had to do was find Elliot.
Cocktail break.
Our team lost the game, 7-9.
I hope that's a reference to 7 of 9. I grounded out to end the game. The other kids were disappointed that the team lost, but I didn't give a shit. I still hadn't won a single king coin. As I trotted toward our dorms, I saw Buddy watching me. He had a fretful expression on his face. "Wendy, what's your next sport?" he called to me. I pretended I didn't hear him and trotted away. "My next sport is running," I thought unhappily. "Running away from this horrible piece of shit place." The ground began to rumble and shake as I passed the main lodge. This time, I ignored it and kept walking to the dorm. I didn't find Elliot after dinner. I saw him heading out the mess hall door with two buddies. They were laughing, talking loudly, grabbing each other's butts, and bumping each other with their chest as they walked. "Elliot!" I called, chasing after him. "Hey, Elliot, wait up!" He turned away from his two friends. "Oh, hi," he said. "How's it going?" "Did you forget you have a sister?" I demanded angrily. He narrowed his eyes at me. "Excuse me? Where have you been?" I asked. A grin spread over his face. "Winning these," he said. He raised the chain around his neck to show off the gold king coins he was wearing. "I've got 5. "Awesome," I said sarcastically. "Elliot, we've got to get out of here," said the Joker to the thief. "Huh? Get out?" He twisted up his face, confused. "Yes," I insisted. "We have to get away from this camp tonight." "I can't," Elliot replied. "No way!" Kids pushed past us on their way to watch the winners walk. I followed Elliot out the mess hall door. Then I pulled him off the path onto the grass at the side of the building. "You can't leave? Why not?" I demanded. "Not till I win my 6th king coin," he said. He jangled the coin necklace at my face. "Elliot, this place is dangerous," I cried. "And Mom and Dad must be..." "You're just gelling," he interrupted. He said jealous, but I know of Destiny's Child, because that took place after this, and I know that people are gelling. And I also know that from Dr. Scholes, you know? Both Beyonce and Dr. Scholes are not happy with people who gel. He jangled the coins again. Wait, Dr. Scholes is happy, but Beyonce's not. There we go, sorry. "You haven't won any, have you?" I balled my hands into fists. I wanted to strangle him. I really did. He was such a competitive jerk. He always had to win everything. I took a deep breath and tried to speak calmly. "Elliot, aren't you at all worried about Mom and Dad?" He lowered his eyes for a moment. "A little." "Well, we have to get out of here and find them," I declared. "Tomorrow," he replied. "After the track meet in the morning. After I win my 6th coin." I opened my mouth to argue with him. But what was the point? I knew how stubborn my brother can be. If he wanted to win that 6th king coin, he wouldn't leave till he won it. I couldn't argue with him, and I couldn't drag him away. "Right after the track meet tomorrow morning," I told him, "we're out of here. Whether you win, lose, or draw." I added the word draw. "Agreed?" He thought about it. "Okay, agreed," he said finally. Then he trotted off to find his friends. Cocktail double space. 4 kids marched in the winner's walk. As I watched from the sidelines, I thought about the kids I knew who had marched before. Deirdre? Rose? Jeff? Had they all gone home? Were they picked up by their parents? Were they back home now, safe and sound? Maybe I'm frightening myself for no reason. Everyone else in the camp seems to be having a great time. Why am I the only worrier? And then I remembered that I wasn't the only worrier. Alicia's tear-stained face floated in my mind. What had Alicia seen that frightened her so much? Why was she desperately trying to warn us to get away? I'll probably never find out, I told myself. When the winner's walk ceremony ended, I didn't feel like going back to the dorm. I knew I couldn't sleep. Too many thoughts troubled my mind, half a lumps and woozles. As the other kids made their way to their rooms, I ducked into the deep shadows. Then I sneaked along the path to the sloping hill that led up to the main lodge. Hiding behind a wide evergreen shrub, I dropped down onto the grass. It was a cool, cloudy night. The air felt heavy and damp. I raised my eyes to the sky. Clouds covered the stars and the moon. Far in the distance, I could see tiny red lights moving slowly against the blackness. An airplane. I wondered where it was headed. Wait, are they in Iowa? It's probably headed somewhere terrible.
you're going to end up in, like, damn it, I don't know a single city in Iowa. Boise, Idaho?
Close enough.
Crickets began to chirp. The wind rustled my hair. I gazed up at the starless sky, trying to relax, trying to calm myself down. After a few minutes, I heard voices, footsteps. I pulled myself up to my knees and ducked below a shrub. The voices grew louder. A girl laughed. Carefully, I peered out from between the piney branches.
Hold me closer, piney branches.
I saw two counselors walking rapidly along the path that led up the hill. Behind them, I spotted another group of counselors making their way quickly up the hill. They all seemed to be in a hurry. I lowered myself behind the shrub and hid in the darkness. They're heading to the lodge, I decided. Must be some kind of counselors' meeting? Their white shorts and t-shirts were easy to see, even on such a dark night. Dark night rises. Well, that was unnecessary. Keeping out of sight, I watched them make their way up the path. But to my surprise, they didn't go to the lodge. Several yards from the lodge entrance, they turned off the path and ducked into the woods.
Where were they going?
I saw two more groups of counselors make their way into the trees. There must be 100 counselors at this camp, I realized, and they're all going into the woods tonight. I waited until I thought all the counselors had passed by. Then, I slowly pulled myself to my feet. I stared into the woods, but I could only see darkness. Shadows upon shadows. The name of Dune's poetry book. I ducked back down when I heard two more voices. Peering through the evergreen branches, I spied Holly and Buddy. They were taking long strides, walking side by side. I waited till they passed, and then I jumped up. Creeping in the deep shadows, I followed them into the woods. I didn't stop to worry about being caught. I had to know where the counselors were all going tonight. Buddy and Holly moved quickly through the woods, pushing tall weeds out of their way, stepping over a fallen tree. To my surprise, a low white structure came into view. It appeared to glow dully in the dim light. The building was built low to the ground. The top was curved. I squinted at it through the trees. It looks like an igloo, I thought. What is this strange building? I wondered. Why is it hidden away in the trees? A dark opening had been cut in the side. Holly ducked into the low entrance. Buddy followed her in. I waited nearly a minute. Then I stepped up to the opening. My heart pounded. Such a strange little building. Round and smooth as ice. I hesitated. I peered into the entrance, but I couldn't see shit. I didn't hear any voices. What should I do? I asked myself instead of the listeners, because this isn't a give yourself goosebumps. Should I go in? Yes. I took a deep breath and lowered myself into the opening. I've been instructed by Geo of Geo's Podcast Consulting to take my release dates and shove them. So 23 chapter. That was trying to be to the tune of David Allan Coe's Take This Job and Shove It, but it didn't work well. Three steps led down to a dim entryway. A single red light down near the floor gave off the only light. I stepped into the dark red glow, then stopped and listened. Hammer time. I could only hear voices speaking softly in the next room. Trailing my hand along the bare concrete wall, I moved slowly toward the voices. An open doorway came up on my right. I stopped outside it. Then I slowly, carefully, peered in. I stared into a large, square room. Four torches hanging at the front of the room sent out flickering orange light. Someone make this whole thing in Minecraft and send it to me at dune@dunereadsgoosebumps.com so I can play in the Camp Jelly Jam map. Then I'm going to grief it like a motherfucker. Swag. The counselors sat on long wooden benches facing a low stage. A purple banner hung over the stage. It proclaimed, "Only the best." It's a little theater, I realize. Some kind of meeting hall. But why is it hidden away in the woods, and why are the counselors all meeting here tonight? I didn't have to wait long for my answer, and neither do you, listeners. Buddy stepped on the stage. He walked quickly into the flickering orange torchlight. Then he turned to face the audience of counselors. I crept into the doorway. There were no torches in the back of the hall.
It was pitch black back there. Walking on tiptoe, I edged my way along the back wall. The door to a closet of some kind stood open, and I ducked into it. Buddy raised both hands. The counselors instantly stopped talking. They all sat up straight and stared forward. Time to refresh ourselves, Buddy called out. His voice echoed off the concrete walls. The counselors sat stiffly. No one moved. No one made a sound. Buddy pulled a gold coin from his pocket. A king coin. I figured. It dangled on a long gold chain. Time to refresh our minds, Buddy said. Time to refresh our mission. He raised the gold coin high. It glowed in the torchlight as he began to swing it back and forth slowly. Clear your minds, he instructed them, speaking softly now. Clear your minds, as I have cleared mine. The gleaming gold coin swung slowly back and forth, clear. Clear, clear your minds, Buddy chanted. He is hypnotoading them, I realized. Buddy is hypnotizing all the counselors, and he's been hypnotized too. Wow, talk about the sheep leading the sheep, or the blind leading the blind, or the blind sheep leading a... There's like a... Okay, so there's a shepherd, and he's blind. The sheep aren't blind. One of them has one eye missing due to, like, an attack by a cougar, but it still sees, and he's blinding him, but he doesn't know where to go. It's in the Bible, look it up. I took a step forward. I couldn't believe what I was seeing and hearing. Clear your minds to serve the Master, Buddy declared, for that is why we are here, to serve the Master in all his glory. Wow, maybe I was right about the hypnotoad. To serve the Master, the counselors all chanted back together. Who is the Master? I asked myself. What are they talking about? Buddy continued chanting out slogans to the crowd of counselors. His eyes were wide. He never blinked. We do not think, he shouted. We do not feel. We give ourselves up to serve the Master. Insert your own Democrats or Republicans joke here, then high-five yourself because you showed them. And suddenly, I had an answer to some of my questions. Now, I knew why Buddy hadn't cried out, hadn't collapsed to the ground when I swung the bat at his stupid fucking chest. He had hypnotized away all feeling. He was in some kind of trance. He thought he was better off alone. He couldn't feel the bat. He couldn't feel anything. Only the best, Buddy cried, raising both fists into the air like Steve Holt. Only the best, the counselors all repeated. Their unblinking faces appeared strange, frozen in the flickering orange light. Only the best, only the best. They all chanted the slogan over and over. Their voices echoed loudly off the walls. Only their mouths moved, like puppets. Only the best can serve the Master, Buddy shouted. Only the best, the counselors chanted one more time. Buddy had been swinging the gold chain over his head during the entire performance. Now he lowered it back into the pocket of his shorts. The room grew silent. A heavy silence. An eerie silence. And then I sneezed. Achoo! Chapter 24. I cupped my hand over my mouth too late. I sneezed again. Buddy's mouth opened wide in surprise. He jabbed a finger in the air, pointing at me. Several counselors jumped to their feet and spun around. Maybe they're just doing the time warp. I turned to the door. Could I escape through it before one of them caught me? No! No way I could get over there. My legs were shaking, but I forced myself to move. I backed against the wall. Why had I stepped so far into the room? Why hadn't I stayed in the safety of the doorway? Who's there? I heard Buddy call. It's so dark, who is it? Good, I thought. He didn't know it was me, but in seconds they'd grab me and drag me into the light. I took another step back. Another darkness fell over me. I spun around. Oh! I cried out when I saw that I had nearly toppled down a steep stairway. It wasn't a closet after all. Black stone steps curved sharply down. Where did they lead? I couldn't guess. But I had no choice. The steps were my only chance of escape. I leaned against the wall and plunged down the stairs. My shoes slid on the smooth stones. I nearly tripped and went sailing headfirst, but I grabbed the wall and steadied myself as I started to fall. The stairs curved down. Down. Every time R.L. Stein mentions stairs going down, he adds an extra down, just to make sure. The air grew hot and sour. I held like Mexican candy. I held my breath. The air smelled like sour milk, like Mexicans. A strange, deep moan rumbled up from down below. I stopped to catch my breath, listened hard. The low moan rolled up the stairway again. A whiff of sour air invaded my nostrils. I turned back. Was I being followed? Had the counselor seen me escape through the open door? No. It had been too dark. I didn't hear anyone on the stairs. They weren't following me. What smelled so bad down below? I thought about my crotch. I wanted to stop right there. I didn't want to climb down any farther. But what choice did I have? I knew they'd be searching upstairs for me. Leaning a hand against the stone wall, I made my way down. The stairway led into a long, narrow tunnel. I could see pale light at the end of it. Another deep moan rumbled in the distance. The floor shook. I took a long breath and passed quickly through the tunnel. The air grew hot and damp. My shoes splashed through puddles on the tunnel floor. Where does this lead? I wondered. Will it take me back outside? As I neared the end of the tunnel, a whiff of sour air made me choke. I coughed and struggled to stop my stomach from heaving. What a disgusting smell! Like decayed meat and rotting eggs? Like garbage left out in the sun for days and days? I pressed both hands over my mouth. The odor was so strong I could taste it. I gagged once, twice, but... Don't think about the smell, I ordered myself. Think about something else. Think about fresh flowers. Think about sweet-smelling perfume. Somehow, I calmed my stomach. Then, pinching two fingers over my nose to keep the odor out, I stumbled to the end of the tunnel. I stopped as the tunnel gave way to a huge, brightly lit chamber. I stopped and stared at the ugliest, most frightening thing I had ever seen in my life. Ah, she must have found her cow mom again. Oh, dude, don't stop. Called her mom a fat cow again. Throwback to the first line of the book. What? Good times.
What makes chapter 25, ay-ay-ay-ay-ay-ay-ay.
Squinting into the bright light, I saw dozens of kids with mops and buckets and water hoses. At first, I thought they were cleaning off a giant purple balloon, bigger than any balloon in the Thanksgiving Day parade. But as the water sprayed over it and the mops soaked its sides, the balloon let out a loud groan, and I realized I wasn't staring at a fucking balloon. It was a creature, and the creature was alive. I was staring at a monster. I was staring at King Jelly Jam. Oh man, this book. That actually wasn't a cocktail break. I just needed a drink after that big reveal. Not a cute little mascot, but a fat, gross, purple mound of slime, nearly as big as a house, wearing a gold crown. Wow, it really is like Dragon Warrior. Two enormous, watery, yellow eyes rolled around in his head. He smacked his fat, purple lips and groaned again. Hunks of thick, white goo dripped from his huge, hairy nostrils. Coke boogers. The disgusting odor rolled off his body. Even holding my nose couldn't keep out the sour stench. He smelled like dead fish, rotting garbage, sour milk, Native Americans, and burning rubber all at once. The gold crown bounced on top of his slimy, wet head. His purple stomach heaved as if an ocean wave was breaking inside of him, and he let out a putrid burp that shook the walls. The kids Dozens of them worked frantically. They circled the ugly monster, they hosed him down, scrubbed his body with mops and sponges and brushes. And as they worked, little round objects rained down on them. Click, click, click. The little round things clattered to the floor. Snails! Snails popped out through King Jellyjam's skin. I started to gag again when I realized that the hideous creature was sweating snails. I staggered back into the tunnel, pressed my hands over my mouth. How could those kids stand the horrible sour stench? Why were they washing him? Why were they working so hard? I gasped when I recognized some of the kids. Alicia! She held a hose with both hands and sprayed Rose. It was very racially insensitive, but it was a different time. Just kidding, she sprayed King Jellyjam's bulging, heaving stomach. Her red hair was soaked and matted to her forehead. She cried as she worked, bawling loudly. I saw Jeff rubbing a mop up and down on the monster's side. I opened my mouth to call to Alicia and Jeff, but my breath caught in my throat, and no sound came out. And then someone came running toward me, stumbling and staggering into the tunnel out of the bright light. Deirdre! A dripping sponge in one fist, her streaky blonde hair drenched, her clothes wrinkled and soaked. Deirdre, I managed to choke out. Get away from here, she cried. Wendy, run! But, I sputtered like people had done dozens of times in this book already. What is happening? Why are you doing this? Deirdre uttered a sob. Only the best, she whispered. Only the best get to be King Jellyjam's slaves. Huh? I gaped at her as she trembled in front of me, shivering from the cold water that had drenched her. Don't you see? Deirdre cried. These are all the winners, all 6-coin winners. He gets the strongest kids, the best workers. See, I'm sure this is going to be the lesson at the end of the book, but I'm going to go on my rambling here. This is why you shouldn't try, you know? Isn't it like, it's like the tallest weeds get fucking weed whacked and shit, you know? The squeaky wheel just has to deal with fucking people. People are terrible. See, if you just all came in third place all the time, you know, third place still gets a bronze medal. You don't have to deal with washing big slugs. That's my advice to everyone. Give about 40% at all times. Maybe 60, 50, somewhere around there. Just don't give it your all. Save your all for bootleg audiobooks. But why? I demanded. Snails popped through the creature's skin and clicked as they hit the hard floor. A wave of sour stench blew over us as another rumbling burp escaped his swollen lips. Why are you all washing him? I asked Deirdre. He has to be washed all the time, Deirdre exclaimed with a sob. He has to be kept wet, and he can't stand his own smell. So he gets the strongest kids down here and makes us wash him day and night. But Deirdre, I started, if we stop washing him, she continued, if we try to take a rest, he'll eat us. Her entire body shook. He ate 3 kids today. No, I cried, gasping in horror. He's so disgusting, Deirdre wailed. Those horrible snails popping out of his chest. That putrid smell. She grabbed my arm. Her hand was wet and cold. The counselors are all hypnotized, she whispered. King Jellyjam has total control over them. I know, I told her. Get out of here, hurry, Deirdre pleaded, squeezing my arm. Get help, Wendy, please. An angry roar made us both jump. Oh, no, Deirdre wailed. He's seen us. It's too late. All right, another cocktail for the final stretch. No, not final chapter, just final stretch. You know what I'm saying? We're doing the last... There's quite a bit more, or some more. Just fucking... You're listening already. Just keep listening. 26. The monster let out another roar. Deirdre loosened her grip on my arm. We both turned toward him, shaking with fright. He was bellowing at the ceiling, roaring just to keep everyone terrified. His watery yellow eyes were shut. He hadn't seen Deirdre and me yet. Wait,
It ends by saying he's seen us. Why do you always do that? It's just lies at the end of it. It's not keeping me hooked. It's just frustrating me.
Get help, Deirdre whispered to me. Then she raised the sponge and ran back to her place at King Jellyjam's side. I froze for a moment. Froze in horror. In disbelief. Another rumbling burp jolted me from my thoughts and sent me scurrying through the tunnel. At least now I knew why the campground shook so often. The sour stench followed me through the tunnel and back up the curving stone steps. I wondered if I could get rid of it. I wondered if I could ever breathe freely again.
Aw, Franklin, did you just attack the kitty?
That means you're up and at 'em. Did you just have a tummy ache? Did you need to fart, sweetheart?
Yeah. You just had to let out a little too?
How could I help those kids? I asked myself. What can I do? I was too terrified to think clearly. As I ran through the darkness, I could picture King Jellyjam smacking his gross purple lips. I could see him rolling his yellow eyes and the ugly black snail squeezing out through his skin. I felt sick as I reached the top of the stairs, but I knew I didn't have time to worry about myself. I had to save the kids who had been forced to be the monster's slaves. And I had to save the rest of the kids in the camp before they became slaves, too. I poked my head out of the closet door. The four torches still burned at the front of the small theater, but the room was empty.
Where were the counselors?
Out searching for me? Probably. Where can I go? I asked myself. I can't spend the night in this closet. I have to breathe some fresh air. I have to go somewhere I can think. Carefully, I made my way out of the low igloo, into the starless night, hiding behind a wide tree trunk. My eyes searched the woods. Narrow beams of white light from flashlights darted through the trees, over the ground, just like E.T. Yes, I told myself. The counselors are searching for me. I backed up, away from the crisscrossing lights, trying not to make a sound, and crept between the trees and tall weeds towards the path that led to the lodge. Much like a stealth mission in video games, which Dune hates 100% and wants to run in there running and gunning. Can I get to the dorms and warn everyone? I wondered. Will anyone believe me? Will there be counselors guarding the dorms waiting for me to show up? I heard voices on the path. I ducked behind a tree and let two counselors pass. Their flashlights made wide circles over the sloping hill. As soon as they were out of sight, I darted from the trees. I ran down the hill, keeping in deep shadows. I made my way past the swimming pool, past the tennis courts, all dark and silent now. A clump of tall hedges beside the track would hide me from all sides, I realized. I ducked behind the hedges, gasping for breath. Dropping to my knees, I crawled into their shelter. I settled myself on the prickly pine needles beneath the hedges and peered out. Only darkness now. I took a deep breath, then another. Such sweet-smelling air. I've got to think, I told myself. Got to think!
There's more of these weird little double-space cocktail breaks in this book than any other one. I think R.L. Stein had a drinking problem. But not old Dune.
Vodka, 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 vodka. Shouting voices startled me awake. When had I fallen asleep? Where was I? I blinked several times. Possibly seven, possibly eight. Sat up and stretched. My body felt stiff. My back ached. Every muscle ached. I gazed around. Discovered I was still hidden in the hedges. A gray, cloudy morning. The sun trying to burn through the high clouds. And the voices. Cheers? I raised myself up and peered through the hedges. The track competition! God damn it, it had just begun. I saw six boys in shorts and t-shirts leaning forward as they ran around the track, a crowd of kids and counselors cheering them on. And in the lead, guess who it is, listeners? Obviously, it's fucking Elliot. Elliot's in the lead. God, you're so stupid. No, I cried hoarsely. My voice still choked with sleep. I stepped out of the hedges, made my way across the grass toward the track. I knew I had to stop him. I couldn't let him win the race. I couldn't let him win the six coin. If he did, they'd make Elliot a slave, too. He ran hard. He pulled far out in front of the other five. What could I do? What? In my panic, I remembered our signal. My two-fingered whistle. My signal for Elliot to take it easy. He'll hear the whistle and slow down, I told myself. I raised two fingers to my mouth and blew.
No sound came out. My mouth was too dry. My heart thudded in my chest. I tried again. No! No whistle! Elliot turned into the last lap. There was no way to stop him from winning now.
Chapter 27.
Nah.
No way to stop him, unless I beat him there. With a desperate Xena cry, ay, 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 ay. God, I haven't watched Xena in long enough. I plunged myself forward and started to run to the track. My shoes pounded the grass. I kept my eyes on Elliot and the finishing line as I ran. Faster, faster. If only I could fly.
That'd be cool if it took a weird turn here and she's like, and I can fly because I hung around with a slug.
Loud cheers rang out as Elliot neared the finish. The other five boys were miles behind. Damn it! Why couldn't you race black people? My shoes thudded onto the asphalt track. My chest felt about to burst. It hurt to breathe. My breath came in loud wheezes. Faster, faster. I heard cries of surprise as I raced over to the track. I plunged up behind Elliot, reached out with both hands, and tackled that motherfucker cop style. Oh! We both toppled in a heap, rolling over the hard track onto the grass. The other boys kept racing past us to the finish line. Wendy, you cunt! Elliot screamed, jumping to his feet. I can't explain now, I shouted back, struggling to breathe, struggling to stop my aching in my chest. I scrambled to my feet. I pulled Elliot up. He tried to jerk free. Why'd you do that, Wendy? Why? I saw three counselors running toward me. Hurry! I ordered my brother. I pulled him away. Just hurry! I think he saw the terror in my eyes. I think that tackling him was a desperate act. And he realized that shit. I think he saw how serious I was. Elliot stopped protesting and started to run. I led him over the grass, up the sloping hill by the lodge, into the woods. Where are we going? He called breathlessly. Tell me what's happening. You'll see in a minute, I called back. Get ready for a bad smell. Huh? Wendy, have you totally lost it? I didn't answer. I kept running. I led the way into the woods to the igloo-shaped building. At the low entrance, I turned back to see if we were being followed. I didn't see anyone. Elliot followed me into the theater. The torches weren't lit. It was pitch black inside. Feeling my way along the back wall, I found the closet door. I pulled it open and led the way down the curving stairs. I know it was convenient to call it a closet when she was ducking in there to hide, but it's no longer a closet door once you know it leads to a stairwell. Halfway down, the sour odor floated up to greet us. Elliot cried out and cupped both hands over his nose and mouth. It stinks! His cry was muffled by his hands. It gets worse, I told him. Like, me and Gio had a campaign that we were texting about that they, you know, they remember It Gets Better campaign for gay people, and it's really important that homosexual kids realize that high school may suck, but high school sucks for everyone. But when you're gay and in your 20s, as long as you use protection, you can just do anyone and have a good time. And then eventually you don't have kids and you just make a bunch of money and live in a good house and you're usually smarter. It's just a better life. But the point is, me and Gio were saying it would be funny if there was a video out there that said, it gets worse. And it had a cool jock type guy that every one of us that listens to a podcast like this hated. And he goes, yeah, I used to get tons of pussy in high school and college, but it gets worse. And then it pans out and he's bald and in a loveless relationship, and it's just like, heterosexuality, it gets worse. Anyway, it gets worse, I told him. Try not to think about it. We jog side by side through the long tunnel. I wished I had time to warn Elliot. I wished I could tell him what he was about to see, but I was desperate to save Deirdre, Alicia, and the others. Gasping from the smell, I burst into King Jelly Jam's brightly lit chamber. Water from a dozen hoses splashed over the monster's purple body. Kid scrubbed furiously as he sighed and groaned. I saw the startled horror on my brother's face, but I couldn't worry about Elliot now. Hit the floor! I screamed at the top of my lungs, cupping my hands into a megaphone. Everybody hit the floor now! I had a plan. Would it work? I bet we're gonna find out, huh? Didn't raise goosebumps, yeah.
Chapter 28, everyone, chapter 28.
The monster's watery yellow eyes grew wide with surprise. His bloated lips parted. I could see two pink tongues dart and coil inside his mouth, like those people in the 90s and early 2000s that were really into BME Zine and thought that if they, you know, or Zine, sorry, whatever. Anyway, they split their tongues and they looked stupid and they showed up on TV and now they're probably regretting it like crazy. A few of the kids dropped their hoses and mops and flattened themselves on the floor. Others turned to stare at me. "Stop washing him!" I cried. "Put down your hoses and brushes! Stop working and hit the floor!" Beside me, Elliot uttered gasping sounds. I glimpsed him struggling to keep the sick smell from overpowering him. King Jelly Jam let out a furious roar as the rest of the kids obeyed my instructions. Thick, white slime dripped from his nose. His two tongues flicked out between his purple lips. "Get flat," I screamed to the kids, "and stay down." And then I saw the monster raise a fat purple arm. With a disgusting groan, he leaned over. His slimy flesh rippled all over his body as he reached out. Reached out to grab Alicia.
"Help, he's going to eat me,"
Alicia shrieked. She started to get up. "No," I shrieked. "Stay down, stay flat." With a terrified cry, Alicia dropped to the floor. King Jellyjam swung his fat fucking arm down, fumbled it over her, tried to lift the little girl up, tried again and tried again. But I had figured right. The monster's fingers were too big, too clumsy to pick up anyone who lay flat on the floor. King Jellyjam... Wait, how did she come to this conclusion after seeing it for like 30 seconds before? Fuck this old bullshit. King Jellyjam tilted his head back and uttered a roar of disgust. I cupped my hand over my nose as the disgusting odor grew more intense. Snails pop, 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 popped out of his skin, rolled down his slimy body, bounced noisily onto the floor. The monster flailed his arms. He leaned down again and struggled to pick up the other kids. But they pressed themselves flat on the floor. He couldn't lift them. He roared again. Weaker this time. His eyes rolled wildly in his enormous head. The smell burned my eyes. It swirled around me, surrounded me in a sour stench. King Jellyjam grabbed for a hose, but he couldn't pick it up. Butterfingers! He slammed his hand into a bucket, struggled frantically to splash water on himself. I stood, trembling, watching every move. My plan was working. I knew it would work. It had to work. The stench grew even stronger. I could taste it. I could smell it on my skin. King Jellyjam flailed both arms. Frantically, he struggled to wash himself. His roars became groans. His body began to shake. I gasped as he narrowed his eyes at me. He raised a swollen purple finger and pointed, accusing me. He leaned forward, reached out, swiped out his enormous hand. I couldn't move. I was too stunned. I shuddered. His hand slid all over me, and before I could struggle, he began to tighten his slimy, stinky fingers around my body.
Chapter 29 is the 29th chapter of the book.
Oh! I uttered a horrified moan. The fat, wet fingers tightened. Waves of odor rose up around me, like pig pen from the horrible Peanuts series. I held my breath, but the smell was everywhere. The fingers wrapped tighter and themselves tighter. The monster began to lift me off the ground, raise me toward his gaping mouth. The two tongues darted and flicked, and then the tongues drooped over his purple lips. The fingers loosened their grip. I slid free as King Jellyjam groaned and fell forward. The kids rolled quickly out of the way. King Jellyjam toppled over head first. The crown bounced away. That was the sound of a crown bouncing. The monster's body made a loud splat as it spread over the floor. Yes! I choked out happily. I was still shaking, trying to forget the slimy feel of his fingers around my skin. Yes! My plan had worked perfectly. The kid stopped washing, and King Jellyjam suffocated from his own foul stench. That's the same thing that happened to President Gerald Ford. Are you okay? Elliot asked in a trembling voice. I nodded. Yes, I think I'm going to be fine. Elliot held his nose. "I'll never complain about Dad's garden fertilizer again," he declared. Cheering and shouting, the other kids climbed to their feet. "Thank you," Alicia cried, wrapping me in a hug. The others rushed forward to thank me, too. There were lots of hugs, lots of tears, as we made our way up to the theater and then out into the woods. "We are out of here," I cried happily to Elliot. But we all stopped at the edge of the woods when we saw the counselors. They all stood in front of us, dozens of them, side by side in their white shirts and shorts. They had formed a line along the path, and I could see from their hard expressions set on their faces that they had not come to welcome everyone back. As I stared from face to face, Buddy stepped forward. He gave a signal to the other counselors. "Don't let them get away," he cried.
Chapter 38.
The counselors stepped forward, moving in a line. Their expressions remained hard and threatening. They kept their arms at their sides. They moved swiftly and stiffly, like robots, not swiftly at all. In a trance, they took two more steps. Then a shrill whistle broke the silence. "Stop right there! Everybody freeze!" A man's voice boomed. I heard another shrill whistle. I turned to see several blue-uniformed police officers running up the hill. The counselors shook their heads, blinked, uttered soft cries. They made no attempt to run.
"Where are we?"
I heard Holly mutter.
"What's happening?"
another counselor asked. They all appeared dazed and confused, like the cast members of the movie Dazed and Confused. The police whistles seemed to have broken the trance that held them and shit. The other kids and I all... Come on, this is the last chapter. You can do it, Dune. Whew. Goosebumps face. Let's get it on. The other kids and I all cheered happily as the officers swarmed up the hill.
"How did you know we needed help?" I called.
"We didn't," an officer replied. "A horrible smell floated into town. We wanted to find out what was causing it. We followed it here." I had to laugh. The same smell that had killed the monster had actually saved us kids. "We didn't know there was a problem at this camp," an officer announced. "We'll contact your parents as soon as we can." Elliot and I led the way down the hill. We were so eager to see Mom and Dad, the counselors muttered to themselves, gazing around, trying to figure out what had happened. I turned to Buddy as Elliot and I walked past him.
"Are you feeling better?"
I asked. He narrowed his blue eyes at me and squinted hard. He didn't seem to be able to focus.
"Only the best,"
he murmured.
"Only the best." Cocktail pause.
Elliot and I were never so glad to be home.
"What took you so long to find us?"
Elliot demanded. Mom and Dad shook their heads.
"The police checked everywhere, trying to find you two,"
Dad replied. "They called the camp several times. The counselor answered the phone and told the police that you weren't there."
"We were so worried," Mom said,
biting her bottom lip and a pork chop, presumably.
"So terribly worried. When we found the trailer empty, we didn't know what to think."
"Well, we're home safe and sound now," I replied with a grin.
"Maybe you two would like to go to a real camp next summer," Dad said.
No way," Elliot and I answered together.
Another cocktail break.
2 weeks later, we had a surprise visitor. I opened the door to find Buddy on the front stoop. His blonde hair was neatly brushed. He wore chinos, a blue and white striped sport shirt, and a dark blue tie.
"I'm so sorry about what happened at the camp," Buddy said. I was still too shocked at seeing him to reply. I just held on to the door and gaped at him.
"Is Elliot home?" Buddy asked.
"Hi." Elliot stepped up beside me.
"Buddy, what's up?"
"I brought you this," Buddy replied. He reached into his pants pocket and pulled out a gold coin.
It's a king coin," he told Elliot. "You earned it, remember? You actually won the race."
Elliot reached out for it, then stopped. His hand hung in midair. I knew what my brother was thinking. This would be his sixth king coin. Should he take it? Finally, he grabbed it.
"Thanks, Buddy," he said. Buddy said goodbye and gave us a wave. Elliot and I watched him get into a car and drive away. Then we closed the door behind us.
"Are you sure you should have taken that?"
I asked Elliot.
"Why not?" he replied. "That purple monster is dead, right? What could happen?"
5 minutes later, we both smelled the horrible odor at the same time.
Yuck! Elliot groaned. He swallowed hard.
Wendy, what's that smell?
He stammered. I don't know, I replied in a shaky voice.
I heard Mom laugh behind us. We turned to see her standing in the doorway to the kitchen.
What's wrong? She asked. I have a pot of Brussels sprouts boiling on the stove! The end!
Wow, why did so many people request that? That was bullshit. So, that's the end of the horror at Camp Jelly Jam, which I'm apparently putting up right away because you guys don't want a release schedule. You just want me to just keep throwing fucking goosebumps at you, and you're going to keep ducking, and I'm going to eventually hit you in the face, and I'm going to beat you to death with the hardcover versions I got from the library. the moral of the story, like I said before, is don't try too hard. What's the point of trying? Just focus on whatever you want. You're not going to make money. You can be happy eventually. Just, you know, stay drunk and have a good time. But don't be the person that's leading the class. No one likes the valedictorian. So on that note, speaking of giving 60%, I'm going to play a different song instead. And we'll take it from there. So stay spooky, bitches. This isn't my job.